Accession number 11945, Reel 6.
Mr. Claxton, Reel 6. You were telling me that when you were in the Black Sea, you didn't actually see any Russian vessels.
No. We were more concerned with the troops ashore.
Did you see anything of them?
Not action. No, saw plenty of them there, down in the Ukraine, Georgia, South Georgia.
What impression did they make on you, these Russian troops?
Pardon?
What impression did they make on you?
Very friendly. Very, very friendly. We were welcome. Wherever we went there, we were welcome. Because South Russia is a different kettle of fish to North. I mean, that's where the revolution started up there around St. Petersburg and that, if you go back through history and that. But they were brought into the fold, not voluntary. They've been kept under all their life. Now they're breaking away now, as you know. But they were the whole lot were friendly. We were welcome there.
Did many of them speak English?
Not to my knowledge, but you made yourself known. You sort of all mixed in. On one episode I remember now, it was in Batum. The Marine Band of HMS Marlborough was sent ashore into the park there, entertainment, and there they were, band, there was all people all around the band and that, and there was two of us, myself, I was a leading telegraphist then, and a signalman named Miles, we were ashore, and we thought we might get lost, so we tied ourselves together with our lanyards. And we wandered onto this flipping part, into this park, tied together, little bit high up in the head and that. God knows what we've been drinking. But we were tied together and we were ambled in front of this band. There's the officer, HMS Marble, all sitting in the seat and us. We were taken back aboard. I can hear the captain now giving us two a lecture, disgraceful exhibition, and our leave was stopped for the remainder of the time we was in Batum. Miles, all these things come back to you through the years. But that was, in the main up in the Black Sea was a sort of a, it was a peace talk. It was peace talk as far as we were concerned, but we were helping out in a sort of, not material. The fact that we were there was a boost for them.
They were a presence. Mm.
North at Leningrad, which was then St. Petersburg, one battleship that was sent there was HMS Canopus. Now, HMS Canopus was also concerned with the Battle of the Falkland Islands in the First World War when Admiral Speer, or I think his name was, he sunk a squadron of ships out there, overrun us. And that was when Admiral Sturdy was sent out with what was then a modern fleet and in turn destroyed him. The Canopus was at Falkland, Port Stanley in the Falkland Islands, 1914. And this admiral, he'd already given the, there was a, the, one of the ships was HMS Hope. I forget the other. But anyway, we just lost him. They were sunk. And then he made his way to the Falkland Islands with his squadron. And as he get to Port Stanley, he can see over the horizon a battleship there, and he thought it was the British fleet were in there, and he turned away from there. Well, and that's when Admiral Sturdee caught up with him, and the only one to get away from that lot then was HMS, or not HMS, but the German cruiser Emden. She was eventually caught and sunk. And not sunk, she was grounded on an island out in the ocean, the Pacific Ocean. Anyway, digressing, getting back to the Black Sea. Eventually that finished, and we came back to Constantinople. From there, we were to go home.
Go ashore in Constantinople at all?
Oh, yes.
What was that like?
We were all right. The war was over, you see. They were our enemies in the First World War. But they were all right. It's not you and I who make war. It's those up top who make the war. We have to do as we're told. And when it's all over, we're all friends again. That's just like that.
So you didn't encounter any feeling of tension then?
No fear. No. No. I'll tell you. We're going back and not tell you while that's on. Anyway, from there we were sent back home. And I'm back to... I go back to Chatham Barracks again. This was getting on for about 1920. Go back home, and the job I was given then, or I took part in then, was on the reserve fleet at Sheerness. There was a lot of ships, minesweepers then, up in the Sheerness, sort of in mothballs. They didn't know what to do with them. And there was we were a spare maintenance crew. Not a lot of us there. It was just an odd job, get us out of the way, till we were wanted back in barracks. Anyway, we were wanted back in barracks because I was sent back to barracks, Chatham Barracks I'm speaking of now. And I was then drafted to HMS Caledon. No. That's right. HMS Caledon I was sent to then, a cruiser. By their standard those days, a modern cruiser. So, you know, to keep us occupied and that. And from there, the lot of us were transferred to HMS Cambrian, same squadron. She come from the West Indies. And the job we was given then, it was when, if you go back through history, you come to the Lausanne Treaty. It was a treaty made, we were trying to get the Greeks and the Turks to act sociably. They never have been sociable. They've always been at loggerheads. Not so much now. I mean, there's Cyprus, for instance. That's half Turkish, half Greek. We were sent to Smyrna, amongst other places. Well, at Smyrna, we were given leave ashore, and for a football match. And I remember that football, alongside the football pitch, it was ordinary field really, was a cemetery. Now out there they buried their people different to we do. They dig a grave and it's lined with bricks, and they put the coffin inside. And then on the top they put concrete slabs, so that when that's all decomposed and finished with, all that's left is bones. That's taken out as a coffin for somebody else. And the bones are put in a huge building on the center, which we used to call the charnel house. Well, shortly before we'd been there, the Greeks had been there and they'd ravaged this place, this cemetery. Everything was broken into, skulls and bones laying all over the place. And one thing I remember vividly was while we was in there looking around and that, a lorry drew up, army lorry drew up, Turks in it. I can see them now opening up the, dropping the tower board, lifting it up, and they drew out a builder's plank. And on this plank was some poor old woman who passed on. There she lay on there, just in her ordinary clothes and that. Her hands and feet were tied together so that she didn't flop about and that. And they simply carried this plank to one this end, one that end, and they carried it over there, over the grave. They didn't put it in the grave. They simply took the plank up and the body dropped in there onto another one that's lying in there. A young fella lying there, I think he was a casualty, but there he lay. And she didn't. And they just took the plank, put it back in the lorry and drove off. I can always remember that. I remember it well.
Do you remember hearing any sounds of fighting in Smyrna?
No, there was no fighting, there was just tension. I think that you could call it tension the whole time.
What were the signs of tension that you noticed?
Well, people not interested in you. They're not interested in you. They want to get out of your way and that. As though we're not wanted. They've got to live their own life and that. But there was no open hostility or anything.
Did you see any British troops in Smyrna?
No.
Just ourselves?
Just ourselves. We were the only ship there.
What about other soldiers?
No, what, Turks or Greeks? Can't recollect ever seeing any. Not really, no.
You were saying that earlier on, when you were in the Black Sea, you went to Trebizond on the northern coast of Turkey.
Yeah.
What was that like? What was the atmosphere like when you were there?
Friendly. We were all up that Black Sea was friendly.
And yeah. Also, you were saying the Russians, the white Russians were friendly.
Oh, definitely.
What did you make of their general appearance and their uniforms and their equipment and so forth? Did they look businesslike and smart?
No, they were more or less sort of an organised rabble. Yeah. Oh yes, they weren't as an army or say a platoon would look all smart. No. They more look more like a disorganised rabble, you could say. Yeah.
Did you see any sign of British troops in?
No.
In those ports?
No British troops there at all. We were there simply to show the flag, as it were. Give a sort of moral support. We weren't going to take part in it. We weren't under any orders, I should imagine, to take part in any action or any sort.
But we did have training teams out there with the White Army.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see any foreign troops at all?
No.
Just the White Russians themselves?
Just the White Russians, yes. There was no interference from them. They were there. But what happened inland, I wouldn't say.
Do you remember if at the time you knew what was going on inside Russia? Were you aware?
No, we didn't know. All I can remember is that General Denikin. I can remember that well, his name, and that we were there to give any support if needed. But in the main, our job was to show the flag.
You don't remember any
one discussing what the ideas of the Bolsheviks were or anything like that?
They wouldn't discuss them with us. No, they wouldn't. Not the higher-ups wouldn't. I mean, we weren't supposed to know. I mean, digressing a bit, 1924, when there was a lot of upheaval in the fleet about reducing the money, reducing the pay. There was that mutiny at Invergordon. Well, the ship I was on then was... No, I'm coming in the back end of 1925. The ship I was on then was HMS Vindictive. Now, that was the last ship I served on. HMS. Now, that wasn't what we call a happy ship. And on one occasion, we went ashore. I wasn't involved in it, but... some of the crew of the ship went ashore in Portsmouth, and they finished up on the town hall steps at Portsmouth singing the red flag. Wasn't there? There's a naval patrol whistle, police whistles blowing all over the place, rounding them up. Anyway, they all got round up and they're aboard. And the captain, I think his name was Howard, Captain Howard, he got, if we want to address the people then, you had there was a routine known as clear lower deck, everybody off. And that meant everybody bar those who were actually on watch. You all got to the quarter deck, mustered on there. And the captain, so the commander would report to captain, everybody present. And that would become the captain, and he'd say his piece, whichever it was. Well, he came up, I remember that he came up on quarterdeck then, and his words were this much. We're in this vein. I don't know anything about politics. I don't want to know. I don't know anything about the Labour Party. I don't know anything about Conservatives. But if you, as a crew of this ship, behave yourself the same as you did last night, he says, you'll finish up in cells. He said, that I'll promise you. And he meant it. For that little effort, we were sent from Portsmouth to Invergordon, the ship, to Invergordon with a fleet. We was the last, practically the last one in the harbour, nearest the sea. That was before we went out to China. Anyway...
Why wasn't the Vindictive happy then?
The commander of the HMS Vindictive was a... His previous commission had been at HMS Shotley. Now, HMS Shotley is at the Ganges... HMS Ganges at Shotley, which was a training establishment. Well... when you join up in the forces, the first thing you've got to learn is discipline. And they put it, they teach you discipline in every shape or form. You don't do this, you don't do that, you do this, you do that. In fact, it's a hell of a life you have if you don't knuckle under to it. If you're prepared to knuckle under to it, you're okay. But if you try to kick against the traces, you're in trouble. Well, they had this commander, Graves, his name was. He was... at Shotley Barracks, doing his stuff, getting them all lined up. His attitude was, if you broke your mother's heart, you don't break mine. And he was a so-and-so. Okay, he did his commission there. He left. He was, when his time was up, he's given another commission, or sent. And his next commission was HMS Vindictive as commander. And he still thinks he's in Chatham, in Shotley Barracks. We're all grown up men on the Vindictive, not boys being trained. But he couldn't get that up in Napa. You see, and an officer on a ship is a little tin god, and he can make your life hell, or he can make you happy, or he can make your life hell. You weren't allowed on the upper deck without your cap on, your hat on. If you were on, you were in the report. or what we used to call the rattle work, because you were punished for that, such as, say, so many days leave stopped, or so many days what they call number 10, which is a couple of hours extra work of a night time where the others are all relaxing, that sort of thing. And of course it doesn't make for happiness in a ship. Everybody's against each other. And that's how the vindictive was.
Do you know,
as I told you, that was the last ship I was on, HMS Vindictive. Mind you, I'm jumping the gun a bit. But anyway, my 12 years finished while I was on the Vindictive. Now, my contract is 12 years from the age of 18, which meant on the 10th of May 1928, I'm supposed to be discharged from the services. But I can't be discharged from the services if I'm out in Hong Kong or up in China. So they've got to send me home. And they couldn't. There was three of us. A fellow named Walkinshaw, myself, and another seaman, leading seaman. Anyway, we had our time finished before the commission ended in China, so we've got to be sent home. But before we can be sent home, they've got to send a replacement for us. And if they can't send a replacement for us, the ship's got to go short of complement of us three, because they're duty bound to send us home. That's a contract. Anyway, I'd put in for a request to be sent home, same as the others, and that. And we had 6 weeks to go for the commission. I had 6 weeks more to go to finish 2.5 year commission. Anyway, they wanted to keep serve out the commission. Well, I was a leading telegraphist then, and the signal officer's name was Lieutenant Commander Wilson, and he sent for us individually to have a talk with us, or the two wireless operators, to have a talk with us individually, to try and get us to stop on. If we volunteered to stop on, all well and good. But if we say no, they'd have to send us home. And he gave me a talk in there about only another 6 weeks to go. And he said, I personally will see that you don't lose anything by it. And that, why won't you stop? I said, well, Lord. He said, well, why don't you? He said, why won't you stop? It's only another 6 weeks. I said, no, I want to go home. He says, why? I said, well, first, I said, I'm a married man. I said, and I haven't been home for 2.5 years. I said, but apart from that, I said, as far as this ship's concerned, I said, I'm fed up to the teeth with it, right up to here, sir. I said, I want to go home. And that finished the interview, and I was sent home. Now, they sent me home. I came on home on SS Fulmer. That was the name of the steamer that I'd come home on. I travelled second class on there. There was four of us. We travelled second class. My fare from Shanghai to Tilbury, £51. Now, by doing that, I cut myself out of signing on for my second period. If I wanted to sign on for a pension, I'd debarred myself straight away by being sent home, them having to pay my fare home. If I want to sign on for the second period, I've straight away got to refund that fare. It was all in black and white there. Refused to sign on, you see. Refusing. It's on the papers now. And that was why I come out when I was 30. If I'd have signed on for another 10 years, I should have been a pensioner. 1938, I should have been a pensioner. That's about 42 years, isn't it? But, on the other hand, directly the 1939 war started, I should have been brought in. Because I'm eligible for re-entry. I'm eligible for recall into the services up to 5 years after you drawn your pension. You see? And I might have been feeding the fishes, instead of which I'm talking to you.
When you decided you wanted to go back home, not stay on and so on, Were you fed up with the Navy generally, or was it
no,
just with that
no,
ship?
No, no, I wasn't fed up with the Navy. I joined it. I loved every minute of it. But as I say, if you have a bad ship, oh, it's hell. You what? Can't talk to anybody. I'm speaking for your superiors. They treat you as though you're mud, and you're not. You're a human being.
What was Lieutenant Commander Wilson like, your immediate officer?
Wilson, he was all right. He was, as a signal officer, he was very good. He treated you as a rating, and you treated him as an officer. But you could talk to him. Now, one form of punishment they had in the Navy was if you'd overstayed your leave. For every 3 hours you were late, or overstayed your leave, or were late, you lost a day's pay and a day's leave. That was a compulsory punishment. Scale and pay, they called it. You lost a day's pay and a day's leave. Well, now, I never lost a day's pay that way until the last leave when I come home from China. And I was due for a month's leave. After 2.5 years, I was due for a month's leave. And there's my liberty ticket, what it was called, your liberty, just a slip of paper with all the particulars on when you started your leave, when you're due back in barracks. And I looked at it one morning. Good God, this is my first wife. I said, I'm supposed to be back in barracks today. She said, no. I said, oh, I am. I'm not sure it. So you are. Well, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going back. No, I was supposed to be back the previous day. So I went back. I was 24 hours late. It cost me 8 days' pay and 8 days' leave. And that's the only money I ever give them. 8 days' pay, 8 days' leave.
This was on your discharge, was it?
Yes. Yeah, that was it. That was the last leave I ever had, because I was on the 10th of May, I was due for discharge from the Navy.
Did you find you had any difficulty in adjusting to civilian life after having been in for so long?
Well, I came out with a sum of money. Now, in the service, Navy... They had Chatham, and I expect the same with Portsmouth, and Devonport was the same. They had what they call a dockyard bank. Now, it was a bank in every sense of the word, the same as Barclays or any of them, but a small a dockyard bank. Now, you could, if you wanted to, you could allot part of your wages to the dockyard bank. You never saw the money. All you knew was that every so often when you were... do for so much money was put to your credit in the dockyard bank, and you got 2.5% on that. Well, what they used to do, a lot of them used to do, was a lot, so much, so £1 a week. So a man was single, so £1. After the war, when the money went up, £1 a week was, if he was single and no worry at all, £1 a week. Well, if he's that's £52 a year. If he's away for 2.5 years, it's near near getting on for £150 with interest, which was a hell of a lot of money in those days. Well, I was married all that time, and I used to manage to allot away 10 shillings. And, of course, by the time I come home, I had about £60 to my credit. Well, I had that when I came out, plus what pay was due to me. So I had a start then. And because you go straight away onto an unemployment benefit, or the dole, as they called it, then 6 weeks. But I had £60, and it just lasted me out till I got a job. And there was about 2 million out of work then. And I got a job at Delarue's, the plastic people, and also the fountain pen people, Delarue's. I got a job there. From there, my wireless knowledge, I got a job at the Ormond Engineering Company, Pentonville Road, London. They were making portable wireless sets, and when I say portable, by God, you'd be a strong man to lift one of them. But anyway, they were portable. And the knowledge, the wireless knowledge that I'd gained in the service stood me in good stead, because from there, I went to a younger brother of mine. He worked at the British Auction Company. He said to me one day, he said, they want some men at the British Auction Company if you're interested. I said, what doing? Because wireless in those days was not the same as now. It was a sort of a seasonal job. You were busy for 6 months of the year, from, say, June till Christmas. Then after that, no one wanted any wireless. They were working. It's not like this stuff here now, television. And it was, as I say, it was seasonal. Anyway, the brother said there was work going along at the British Auction Company. Was I interested? So I said, what's it doing? He said, well, it's soldering mostly. So I said, well, we'll have a try, because it was nearer home for me. And I went up there and saw a foreman named Garnish. Blah, 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 this and that. Do I, what had I done that?